Hey, my name is Jason. I'm the producer of It Starts With Attraction. I wanted to let you know that we have a brand new website solely dedicated to working on your pies. Introducing itstartswithattraction.com. You can listen to every episode, learn about the pies, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Go to itstartswithattraction.com. It starts with attraction, one word, itstartswithattraction.com to get signed up today.
This week on It Starts With Attraction.
Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Hal Hirschfield. He's a professor of marketing, behavioral decision-making, and psychology at UCLA's Anderson School of Management. His research, which sits at the intersection of psychology and economics, which is fascinating, examines ways that we can improve our long-term decisions, and he earned his PhD from Stanford University. He has a new book out called Your Future Self, How to Make Tomorrow Better Today. It's the psychology of long-term decision-making and how time affects people's lives. Let's dive into today's conversation.
There's a process to falling in love, and it starts with attraction. Join Kimberly Beam Holmes and her special guest as they discuss how to become the most attractive you can be, physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually, or as we refer to it, working on your pies. We'll teach you how to have better relationships and become more attractive to others, and maybe more importantly, to yourself. It starts with attraction, and it starts now.
Hal, I'm so excited for you to be on the podcast today and to talk about the new book that you have out, a lot of the research that you've been doing, which is around this idea of the future self. So kicking things off, what is the future self? How do you define that?
Yeah, first up, thanks so much for having me. Okay, so the future self, it's like really any version of you that exists at some point down the line. Now, I mean, we have to get a little bit more specific. Part of what matters here is what our goals are, you know? So if I'm talking about, the retirement community that I want to live in the future, well, then obviously my future self is, you know, for me about 30 years down the line, and it's, you know, a much older version. If I'm talking about, you know, where do I want to be in 5 years time with regards to my health? Where do I want to be next year in terms of, you know, the health of my relationships, my marriage, that sort of thing. Well, now I'm talking about a different future self. And, you know, one thing that becomes interesting is that there's a lot of little selves along the way. So if I'm really interested in like next summer or, you know, the fall of 2024, being able to run a marathon, I can't just say, I just want to do that. Now I have to think about, you know, my tomorrow morning self that's got to start waking up earlier to run and the version of myself in 2 days and so on and so on. All of those add up to that eventual future self that we're thinking about.
Yeah. What led you to be intrigued with this line of research? As a researcher myself, there's always something that like leads people into it, right?
Yeah.
So what was it for you that got you interested in this?
I mean, a lot of it's, you know, boiled down to the financial side of things, right? So, you know, this is years ago, around the time of the, you know, the financial crisis of 08, 09. I got really interested in, you know, why are people having a hard time making decisions that they're later satisfied with? And why is it so easy to get sucked into the present? You know, I mean, a lot of people could be forgiven for like deciding to take on too much house, right? For example. So I started getting interested in sort of the psychology of long-term decision-making with regards to financial outcomes. And then quickly realized, you know, a lot of the decisions that we face in our lives that are spread out over time, you know, in other words, where there's consequences now and consequences later, those don't have to be financial in nature, but they still have that same sort of like flavor to them. And so I started getting interested in the big picture there.
Yeah. So what are those outcomes that you're looking for? I know a lot of the research that you've done has been more in that kind of retirement, saving for retirement space. So the financial and retirement aspect of it. But if you were to put these outcomes into categories, and financials may be one of them, what are the other categories that there are?
Right. So of course the, you know, retirement is one of them, but you know, there's other, like what we would call domains, right? So health being one, eating, you know, being another, ethical decisions, those also involve sort of like short-term costs and long-term benefits, or you could flip it around. There's short-term gains and long-term costs in that case. But also, you know, like how we spend our time. Do I do things that really benefit me right now, but may not, you know, may have a cost later? Do I sort of decide to do something that is like a little bit awkward or uncomfortable right now, but it's good for me later? I mean, also relationships. You know, I've never studied this, but I'm really curious if conflict avoidance falls under the same sort of short-term, long-term trade-offs, because avoiding a conflict in the short term, that feels better. But things, of course, balloon over time if I don't attend to them, right? So, you know, there's lots of different spaces where these trade-offs matter.
Yeah. Well, and the other part of it that comes into this, and I know other people have asked you this before as well, is people's personalities and how that plays into that. Because so my personality on the DISC profile is a very high D. So while no one loves conflict, I'm more of the person to run into conflict head first and get it over with, because that's how I'm driven. It's more of how I'm wired. Whereas someone who might be an S on the DISC, a steady, is very conflict avoidant, right? Yeah. So, and is that something that should change? So when we start looking at things like that and think about our future selves, do we want to change certain things about our personality that make us who we are?
Well, so I think, you know, that is a really deep question. and, you know, we have to be careful with how we answer it. So I think it's a question that could apply to lots of different things, not just personality change, but any sort of change. I come from the perspective of, I don't think anyone should have to change whatever they're doing unless what they're doing is causing them to suffer in some way. Right. And so if I tell you that it's really a problem in my life that I don't handle conflict that well, then, yeah, I do think probably my well-being might be improved if I start changing that. Right. But if I told you, you know what, I'm really conflict averse, and to the best of my knowledge, like, that's okay. Like, maybe that works in my relationships. Maybe maybe I'm not causing any harm by avoiding conflict. Then, like, who am I to say that you should change, right? That, you know, but now on the surface, it kind of seems like a certain amount of conflict is good, you know, a certain amount of X, Y, and Z is good. But it's really hard to judge unless we sort of dig into the idiosyncrasies between people.
Yeah. One of the things that you talk about is some people being more connected to their future self and some people being less connected to their future self. Can you explain what that means and which one is better?
Okay. So the way that I think about this, first off, you know, think about your future self as if it's another person. That's like already kind of strange, but, you know, in reality, future you, for all intents and purposes, may be another person. And when I say future you, I mean, you know, you in 5 years, you in 10 years, but also, by the way, it could be you tomorrow morning. You know, if I'm staying up late and my goal tomorrow morning is to get up and run, like, that future version of me is like, I'm not thinking about him that deeply, right? now, when it comes to sort of closeness, think about how you relate to other people in your life. I'm going to bet that there are people that run the full gamut from, like, someone you know, you see around, you might wave to them. Maybe you've talked to them once or twice, but, like, they're not in your like inner circle. Right. And, like, if, you know, I don't know who that would be, like,
The people you went to high school with that you want to avoid in the grocery store, those people.
I mean, I don't want to, like, don't want to throw anyone in the bus, but, yeah. Like, if one of them did see you in the grocery store and was like, you know, hey, I'm in a pickle. I need someone to help me move this weekend or whatever, like, pack up stuff in my, like, storage unit. Like, oh, that sounds really nice, but, like, I can't do it. I don't have the time, right? But then, like, if your spouse or your kid or your closest friend was like, hey, I'm in a pickle. Can you help me out this weekend? I got to get stuff out of my storage unit. Like, you'd probably find a way to make that happen, you know, or you would do everything you could to figure out how to help them. So think of our future selves the same way. If we are lacking in sort of emotional connection to them, if they're kind of like our high school classmate who I want to avoid at Kroger or Safeway or whatever, then I'm probably not going to do much for their benefit, right? And, but if on the other hand, they're more like a loved one, a close friend, a spouse, which I know is sort of weird to think about for our future self, someone with whom I have a connection and for whom I want to take responsibility, then I may end up doing things that benefit them. So, you know, you ask what's better. Obviously, it depends, and it depends on the context. But in many cases, we're seeing that people who are more connected to their future selves do more for them.
So it's really, so you're suggesting it's thinking about that future self as a friend, another person that you can gain closeness to or not have closeness to. Is that right?
I think that's a good way to put it.
So then how do you create closeness to a future version of you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange question in a way. But then at the end of the day, think about this. Like, we regularly ask, how do we prompt someone to feel closer to strangers? Right. How do I get you? I mean, why would that be relevant? Well, if I'm getting you to donate to a charity, what don't I do? I don't give you a list of stats, right? It's like boring. It's abstract. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah. I do paint a picture. I tell you a story. I might tell you $100 is going to do this for this number of people. What is it being used for? I might show you a picture, you know, and this is not just like, you know, I think we can all come to mind. We can all bring to mind like the sort of classic, you know, kids are hungry or there's pets and shelters, but it goes far beyond that. I mean, we think about, you know, refugee crises or, you know, we think about homelessness in America and so on and so on. The same ideas can apply to our future selves. If we figure out how to make them vivid and emotional, that can bring them closer so that we end up doing something for them. You know, now, I mean, this is just kind of one way to get closer to future selves. But in my work, you know, I've done things like shown people what they'll look like when they're older, or we've done a study where we've given people almost like a Mad Libs type of exercise about their future selves. And they like fill in all these blanks and then they like are read back like a letter from their future self, you know, or like other researchers have done something really clever, which is you have people write a letter to your future self and then back from your future self. And, you know, it's so smart because you're like forced to step into the shoes of your future self and like see what that would, you know, what that life would be like. Anyway, there's other strategies too, but like that's the first, you know, scratching the surface of how can we bring that future self in closer to make them more of a friend.
Yeah. So kind of providing a story around them, around that person, and making it more lifelike and wanting to move towards it. I heard you talk about on one of the podcasts I heard you on, you were talking about a woman who there was a company that used AI to like generate a picture of herself in the future. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah. So this is only a couple of weeks ago. One of the European banks, they asked people to upload a photo of themselves. And then they said, write about what an ideal day in retirement would look like. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, the case I read about, this woman said, running through a field of poppies with my three dogs, which is funny, right? Because it's like, that's actually pretty vivid. Like I can kind of picture that. But then, you know, she uploads this photo and presses a button and they use sort of a package of AI image generators. And like in seconds, here's this like painting almost of this woman, 30 years older, with these like beautiful purple flowers sort of both in front of her and behind her. And at the front of the scene is this like dog. It's like, you know, like the dog is right in the camera and then there's two dogs running behind her. And it's like, man, if I like could define happiness in a photo, like it was that. And it, you know, what I loved about that was that is so much more like bright and vivid compared to like retirement. Yeah. You know, yeah. Now you know, that bank claims that interest in their retirement products has dramatically increased since they've used this sort of AI generator, image generator. It's not a controlled study, so I don't know, but it's, you know, it's really compelling.
Yes, it is. It is very compelling. And the other aspect of this too is the other way I heard you talk about it was when we think about our future self, we're basically asking our current self to make a sacrifice. Mm. And when we think about it in relationships, like our day-to-day relationships, when we are in a relationship with someone where we feel like we are the ones constantly making the sacrifice, it yes. makes it difficult to be in a relationship. Like a lot of times those are the relationships we want to end and we want to move on from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how can you expand on that a little bit more? And then what is the reframing that right. you believe works and is effective in helping to see our future self as someone we want to make sacrifices for, right. Or is it always sacrifices that we need to make?
No. And I think all these questions are great. Look, in a relationship that's existing, you know, right now in the present, if I'm always the one making the sacrifices, like that's not good. Yeah. Of course, you know, I think relationship counselor would probably say, well, like, hold on a second, you know, does it feel that way? Or is that the case? Right. You know, the classic yeah. research on, you know, you ask married couples what percentage of the housework they do and it adds up to 140%.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, but there's some insight there, which is to say that, you know, when it comes to current and future selves, sometimes it may just feel that way, right? But are there ways to sort of like change our perspective and change the framing, right? And so, mm-hmm. you know, one thing I would say first and foremost is like, how can we break those quote unquote sacrifices down to feel easier to undertake? You know, in the book, I talk about, you know, I call it making the big small, taking the big things and sort of chunking them down and like just breaking things into little pieces. So I'm not, you know, tackling this giant thing, but I can sort of find out smaller pieces. And then, you know, like figure out how I can actually like handle the first one. Mm. There's another way to think about this, though, which is to say, like, how can I make those sacrifices feel more pleasant? You know, so it's not just breaking them down, but literally adding a component, you know. And so I think we have this black and white view of now and later. We have this black and white view of the self and others. But I mean, who hasn't experienced, well, I shouldn't say who hasn't, but like, I think many of us have probably experienced the joy that comes with doing something for another person, hmm. right? You know, you experience that with your kids, with your spouse, lots of people. So, you know, is there a joy that can come from doing something that you know will benefit you later? But can you also take some, you know, present moment benefit as well? You know, in really concrete terms, Katie Milkman at Wharton has like what she calls temptation bundling. The idea is I bundle up any sort of present moment temptation, something that's like a guilty pleasure, with the thing that's going to actually benefit me in the long run. You know, so her example is like, mm-hmm. you can't listen to the next chapter of your audiobook or whatever, you know, true crime podcast you're listening to unless you're working out at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, the nice thing about that is it's like present you get something, but so does future you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I do really like the concept of thinking back to that future self. I'm a big Peter Attia fan. I don't know if you know who that mm-hmm. is.
Yeah.
And a lot of people know who that is. And one of the things that, and I'm also really big into fitness. Like I love working out and all that stuff, but hearing him talk about what he calls the, like the last decade of your life and think kind of planning for that. What do you want to be able to do in the marginal decade of your life? How do you want to be able to play with your grandkids? What right. kind of exercises do you want to do? And then your today should guide what you want that to look like, right? So it changed for me. It was a huge reframe of I'm not just doing back squats to do back squats. It's like I'm building a muscle that I know is going to get small, like I'm going to lose as I get older, but I want to be able to climb up a set of stairs in Paris so that I can still travel when I'm 80 years old.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that reframing of it, I think, has been super helpful. And the other one I think people get really stuck on here too is like nutrition or what they eat, right? Because man, you want the cheesecake now, you know? Right. And right. The younger you are, you could kind of get away with that a little bit easier. But the older we get, for several reasons, that's not so forgiving over time. And is it helping us get to that future self? I don't know what my question is there. It's more just a statement.
No, but it's no. These are great observations. I mean, you know, there's a couple of things. You know, one is the cheesecake example. Of course, it's like if I had a slice of that tonight or drank, you know, an extra glass of wine, like I'd feel a little bit of it tomorrow, but like it goes away quickly. And like it would be hard to have like a medical professional, I think, say to me like that one piece that like that did you in, you know. But it's, the problem is we make little exceptions about everything in the present, you know. So it's like that one cheesecake, that one day I didn't work out, whatever it is, they add, like you said, they kind of add up, they like string together to create this, you know, a different future in a way. The back squats example is a great one because I can reframe that as like, I'm not just doing this for the sake of doing it, but also like so that I can walk up those steps. And I love that specific example because it wasn't what you said was really interesting. It wasn't just so that I could be healthier in older age, but it was vivid and specific so that I can walk upstairs in Paris or Florence or wherever you want to go when you're 80 and still do that. And I think that's, you know, if you had said to me, I want to do this so I can be healthier when I'm older, I might say like, will that really move the needle? Like it's probably too abstract.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that people think about their future self at all normally?
Well, yes, at all, but not like they definitely like, I think, you know, look, I know that wasn't meant to sound funny. It's like, yeah, I do think to some extent they do. Right. You know, there's a data point from the Institute for the Future. It's a sort of think tank that studies the future. And one of the things that they asked, I think it was several thousand Americans. Now, this is several years ago, so I don't know how it'll change. I think the data is from 2017. They asked them, you know, how often do you think about the future in 5 years, 10 years, you know, 30 years? No, about a quarter of people said that they just like rarely or never think about the future in 5 years. Oh. And almost half said they rarely or never think about the future in 30 years. Now, that's a different question than the one you're asking. They didn't specifically ask about future selves.
Sure.
I think, you know, it's baked in. Like to some extent, part of, you know, living in a developed country and you know, being fortunate enough to you know, be somewhat comfortable is to say like, I roughly know, you know, I have an expectation that I will get older or that I'll even live to next week. But, you know, on a day-to-day level, I question, you know, how much are people really thinking about that? And to some extent, why should we? Like we live in the present, you know, that's the time period that we exist in literally, you know? And so you could understand why somebody isn't like regularly thinking about their future self.
But do you think they should?
Okay. I know you want me to say I should. This is about as far as I'll go. I think people should think about their future selves if they're finding a gap between what they intend to do and what they actually do. So if I told you that I really want to be waking up and working out, I really want to be facing conflict more head on. I really want to be cutting back on ordering desserts, but I'm just never doing it. Well, there's a tension there. That's a struggle. Mm-hmm. And there's the struggle is that there's a gap between my intentions and my behavior. So if I have said that to you, then yes, I do think someone in that boat should think more about their future self. And it may cause them to close that intention behavior gap. Generally speaking, should people think more about their future selves? I'm going to give the answer that like my MBA students absolutely hate, which is It depends. You know, it depends on what your goals are. It depends on what your happiness is. It depends on how satisfied you are with your life. And it depends on whether you're falling short of what you're wanting to happen.
Fascinating. So can you give me an example of someone who may not think much about their future self because they are happy and content in their present situation? And they have nothing that they would want to change or do better in.
That's a really good question. It's funny because the first way I think to answer that question is like with a data point, right? So there is a data point from one of my colleagues at UCLA, Paolo Giuliano, who looked at patients. So how, you know, how patient people are. As it relates to well-being, you know, call it happiness. And how does she look at patients? It's like, you know, like decisions on like, do I want more, well, a little bit now or wait for more later, that sort of thing, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. She finds this kind of like U-shaped relationship, or I guess I should say upside down U-shaped relationship. What that means is that if I'm really impatient, I'm less happy. If I exhibit some patience, I'm happier. But then if I go too far and I'm like, you know, really like rigid and really patient and I only do things for the future, then I see a downturn in my happiness. So, you know, it's like your question makes me think, well, I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head someone who's like just not thinking about the future. Like, I mean, I might, you know, I go to like some sort of like hedonistic being, you know, that. That's fine and well, so long as they're not surprised when they arrive at a future that's like relatively unplanned for.
Okay. I can see why you would say that and where you're coming from. So you're basically saying if we only live in the moment and we don't think about how our actions, our decisions, our behaviors are going to affect us long-term or the people around us long-term, then we may end up at this future self that we haven't considered and it not be what we were hoping for it to be.
Yeah. I mean, it would be hard. It would almost be hard to imagine somebody who's just like literally never thought about that future self. But
yeah,
you know, where it worries me is, you know, somebody says, I'm just going to like, you know, just constantly live like a YOLO existence. There's some real benefits to that, of course, in the moment. And it's cool. Like I'll just like keep working forever until I die. You know, the problem there, right, is we can't know what sort of like health issues we'll face and how things might change. And, you know, we're not, like it sounds so cliche to say like we're, you know, we age, our bodies age, right? I mean, but you know, it's like even in my own life, like when I teach the intro marketing class to MBAs. Almost 10 years ago, I started teaching at UCLA and I love teaching the class. I love interacting with the MBAs. And I had this thought of like, you know, I could teach this until the day I die because, or the day I retire, because I love it. And, you know, I study this stuff and like only recently, I still love it, but I'm like, it's like a little more tiring lately. Like sometimes I don't like relate to the student. I mean, I sound like old and cranky right now, but it's like, but it's like, that's funny. You know, like in my own life, like that I think things are changing and, you know, maybe I'll want to do something different in terms of, you know, literally what I teach, which feels like not a huge thing, but it's enough that it impacts my life, you know?
Yeah. And that's true. That's another thing that I've heard you talk about, which is there sometimes where our current selves are making promises that our future selves don't want to follow through on, that they don't want to cash in, like writing checks now that we don't want to cash in on later. So how do you navigate? And a lot of, I also want to just give you like, so clearly I have a bias in this because of the research that I do and because of, you know, I love teaching and talking about like, how can we become better? How can we continue moving forward in certain areas? But then also my research for my PhD is in line of goal progress and self-esteem.
Right.
And so how does moving towards a goal and achieving that goal actually impact areas of how we look at ourselves and how we feel about ourselves. And knowing that when people set goals and don't achieve them, there's a negative impact to well-being and self-esteem. And so you have to like disengage and reorient, but, and, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes in there with that. But as I'm asking you these questions, it's kind of coming through that lens of, you know, I kind of viewed our future self, as you talk about it, is it's the future person that we want to be, but there's goals that we can set to help us get there. And yeah. So how do we move towards those goals, but also realizing that we may make a decision today and set a goal today that in a year, 10 years, whatever, we don't want to do anymore.
And that requires a certain degree of maturity mm-hmm. and sophistication that comes from recognizing that our goals can shift and our priorities can mm-hmm. shift. And I think that's, you know, it's almost a little, mm-hmm. it's, I don't know what the right word is, like confronting in a way mm-hmm. to say that, because, you know, anybody who's ever gone through a career shift or a relationship change, mm-hmm. you know, probably knows that, right? That like part of what's happening there is that, you know, life is turning out differently than you had maybe anticipated. And mm-hmm. that requires yeah. a huge amount of maturity and sophistication to recognize that something's changed. And it may be better for me to make that change, right? I think that, you know, the problems arise when we like keep going down a path that's not optimal because our past selves
yeah.
made some decision.
That's interesting. When we think about, so one of the questions that I wrote was how do we think about our future selves when we don't know what's going to happen between now and then? And another question I wrote was, is there parts of our journey to our future self that you would consider that we navigate, like we have a navigating control of, like we are the captain of the ship in this area, versus having a reactionary control of? So something happens and we have to figure out how to deal with that. And you talk about like a core moral trait, for example, like the people right, have this core moral part of us. Is that something that we have more like that? Does that stay the same? Is there something that stays the same through this process that keeps us grounded and keeps us moving? Or is all of it kind of shifting as we move towards our future self? Right.
So I don't think all of it is, you know, in fact, the data is really interesting on this. If you look at personality change, mm-hmm. You know, we have our big five personality traits, right? Openness, yeah. conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism. One of those in a 10-year period will change somewhat significantly. You know, researchers say it's, you know, a standard deviation, which is very hard to explain. But basically, you could just say you can expect some like shifts in these things. And I think you can look at your own life and say, was I, you know, what has changed in 10 years? Like for me, like I think I'm less extroverted now than I was. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of that is aging, some of that is COVID, you know, but it's like funny because like my wife is now more somehow. So I think it's like we kept our same average as a couple, but like we've completely flipped spots. So on the one hand, some stuff does change. On the other hand, you know, if you say you have five big personality traits and four of them remain roughly the same in 10 years, like that's a lot of stability. So there's two things that are happening here. One is we can't know our future selves. Like we simply can't know how the decisions that we make will change our preferences and feelings. Like I can take a guess. I can take a guess at what'll happen if we move from LA to San Francisco, but I won't know until I won't know for sure until I actually do it. You know, and this is like part of the fear of jumping into something. And yet I could probably come up with a couple things that will remain expected and consistent over time. There's a recent research paper, and I'm sorry to, you know, keep saying like this paper and that paper, but it's, you know, it's good to look into the data here. There's a recent paper that asked people to think of two things that you will expect, you know, for your future self. And what's that, what that's doing rather than say like two surprising aspects of your future self? The expectation is calling to mind consistency. So it's not all changing, but if I can come up with the consistency, that provokes more of a sense of meaning, because meaning in life really is all about order and consistency and things working out the way that we expect them to. So if I can like put a pin on it, things won't work out the way that we expect them to overall. But there are certain things that probably will remain constant. And if we can try to figure those out idiosyncratically for our own selves, that may help with these sort of future plans.
So is that the two things that we would want to stay the same, or we would expect to stay the same? So are those things about us? Like, I want to continue to be X, Y, or Z. I want to continue to have this trait about me, or this core moral ethic part of me.
Yes, I think that's right. At the same time, maybe recognize that it could change. You know, I mean, I don't want anybody to get, you know, surprised when life changes. You know, one of the exercises that really struck me when I was working on my book was to think about what's changed, you know, say from 20 years ago to 10 years ago, from 10 years ago to now. In my own life, like, I can come up with a lot of things. We've moved cities. We have kids now. We didn't. And it's like, I'm, you know, like a different band, blah, 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 like all these things, some of which are surface level, some of which are really deep identity. Now, what will change in 10 years? Will everything be the same? Like, I don't think so. Yeah. And I, you know, on the one hand, I don't know. And that's scary. On the other hand, isn't it kind of liberating to say, like, I'm capable of change. Things will change. And like, let's see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm also the personality type that loves change. <So I'm> like, let's go. Let's sell everything and move to India and, you know, see what happens when we do that. But yeah, no, I think that's such an interesting point. And one of the other things I've heard you talk about, especially, and this is kind of going to be putting my marketing hat on and your marketing hat on, is that there's every company in the world out there is like the kind of the thing behind marketing is we have a solution to a problem you have and we can help you change. Right. So, and then for the client or for the potential client, it's, I don't know that I trust you to help me change. I don't know that I want to change. Right. There's all of the, there's a, an obstacle up for them wanting to change. Yeah. So wax poetic on that. Like go a little further into what is it that actually begins to help people change? And from a person, what is it that actually helps people begin to change either in themselves or when you believe you have something that can help someone change, how do you help them see that?
Right. So I actually think that, Gabrielle Oettingen, she's a psychologist at NYU. She has some really fascinating work on what she calls mental contrasting. So if I want to change, I have to first say, okay, what do I want to be at some future point? And what does my life look like right now? And then what's the contrast between now and later? Because one of the things that we might do mistakenly is say, let's paint some ideal picture of the future and stop there. I want to change. I want to become that thing. And that feels really good to kind of think about that, ah, like that version of me. But then ironically, I don't do anything. And so, you know, if you want to actually start, like, and we're getting really concrete here, I think you have to engage in the mental contrast and say, what's the difference between now and that ideal point in time? And then you need to say, what are the obstacles that stand in the way between now and later? And what are the obstacles that are overcomable? Because if I tell you my goal is to have a, you know, a mega yacht off, you know, the French Riviera or something like that, you know, the obstacle that stands in the way is that, like, I don't have like $1 billion and I probably won't, you know, it's like that might shift my goals some, you know, that's kind of dumb, but like, you know, if I can say, okay, well, let's come up with a realistic ideal future. Let's come up with what the contrast is. Let's think about the obstacles. And then now let's like get concrete and say, like, what's the very first step I can take to start to overcome that? You know, it's like, I need to see a therapist. Okay, fine. What's the first step in that? Like, do I, I'm going to go with my insurance or out of pocket? Like, what is it? Like, look them up. How about, okay, next Wednesday at 11:30 a.m., it looks like I have a free block of time. I'm going to spend 20 minutes researching this and I'll put it on my calendar. I mean, that is about as specific as you can get. Mm-hmm. Without that, that's like kind of a commitment. Without that, you know, it's easy to kind of stay in the realm of ideal fantasy without action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where do you think people get most frustrated in this process? Is it that it's difficult for them to actually sit down and take the time to picture their future ideal self, and so they don't move towards it? Or is it they know, but they haven't taken the discipline to take the actions, or something else in between that?
It's a really good question. I mean, I would just have to speculate because I don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. I would almost speculate that one of the most difficult aspects is not seeing progress. Mm. You know, like, because there's so many pursuits that we engage in over time that result in sort of invisible progress. You know, saving money is actually one that does have some sort of, you know, salient, concrete, you know, accumulation of money. But like getting healthier, like, mm-hmm. I might feel it eventually on like a subjective level. I have more mm-hmm. energy, whatever it is. But it's hard to sort of, you know, like see that progress over time. And I would imagine that can be frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do people do when that happens? What should they do? What would you recommend?
Don't give up. I actually really love a technique. This is really more specific to goal pursuits where there's like concrete goals that if I want to work out 5 days a week or 3 days a week, and I want to lose 5 pounds in 2 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. I need to work out a couple times a week, right? And so one place of frustration is not just the not seeing progress, but the like, what happens when I like fail to meet my goal? You know, so like week one is great, I did it. Week two is great, I did it. Week three, like it was rainy outside, whatever. I didn't get around to my three workouts. Now I've only worked out once. You kind of want to just give up, right? And it's like, I might as well now eat cheesecake too, right? Because I've already messed up this one thing. So one thing I really like is to set goal ranges. So it's not three times a week, but it's like anywhere between two and four. Mm-hmm. And that way it's like the middle is three. You know, if I don't hit that, I've at least gotten the two. But if I do hit the three, maybe I can push myself to do a little bit more. So it's like this great thing where it's like I have something that's like an easy goal and something that's a stretch goal. So I'm always kind of like pushed. The other thing I really like, it's work by Marissa Sharif. She's introduced what she calls goal reserves. And the idea is, you know, specific, like think about this again, this workout example. I might give myself an imaginary like goal reserve of like two workouts that I can like just say like, you know what? I only got to one workout this week. I'm going to pull one of my imaginary goal reserves and like apply it. You know, I mean, you know, Duolingo does this, the language, you know, app, you go on a streak and then, you know, you're learning every day and then you miss a day. They don't automatically set you back to zero. They say, you know, do you want to reach into your reserves and like apply one here? So your streak can get like, do you want to like retrospectively pause your streak so you can keep going? It's just psychological, but like, everyone wants to feel like they're continuing to make progress. And that's right. If I fall off, then I'm all of a sudden it's like, it's really hard to get back on.
That's so true. That's so true. And the gamification of it is such a thing. Cause even as you were giving that example, I thought if I saw all these things checked off and then one day and it was going to set me back to zero, I might give up for the future. Totally. Just say, screw it. I'm done.
Yeah,
I put all that effort and now it's all wasted because I missed one day. So that's a really
important
concept.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I think that's right.
Yeah. I haven't heard that at all. So your new book just came out, Your Future Self, How to Make Tomorrow Better Than Today, The Psychology of Long-Term Decision Making and How Time Affects People's Lives. What are some of your favorite things that, without giving us exactly what they learned, but what are some of the things that you reveal that our audience can get excited about as they're waiting for the book to show up?
Okay. So one of my favorite parts of the book, I would say, was talking to a guy who said yes to everything, Danny Wallace. He was the basis for Jim Carrey's movie Yes Man from ages ago. And that particular interview was fascinating because it like sort of talked about the push and pull between committing our future selves to things that we'll later regret, how mm-hmm. to sort of navigate that process, but then also like where might it benefit us to say yes to stuff. You know, one of the other things I would say is like, on the one hand, I talked to him. On the other hand, I talked to a, you know, an incredibly warm and compassionate palliative care doctor in San Francisco about, you know, how do we think about the end of our lives? And I don't necessarily get into like the concrete aspects of that, but that interview really was a really emotional one to talk about, like, when does plan making go right? And when does it sort of go awry? So, you know, the book has a lot. It's not just like, here's a data point, there's a data point. It's like a lot of stories that try to illustrate some of the research.
Bringing the research to life.
Yeah.
I love that. Thank you so much for joining me today and talking about this topic. And I am excited to continue to read the things that you have coming out. I think it's important. The work that you're doing is great. And, man, like on a personal note, I don't know if this will make it in the podcast, but the way that this applies to marketing, I want my whole marketing team to read this book and find anything else that you do where you talk about this with marketing. Cause I'm like, this is it. I think that psychologists make the best marketers.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I love that. Well, thanks. This is really fun. It was great to chat with you.
Yeah. Great to chat with you too. Here are my key takeaways from today's episode. A lot of times we don't think about our future self. We tend to just go through life reacting to whatever is happening on a day-to-day basis. But if we really want to have some control over where we're headed or what we would like to accomplish in life or the things that we would like to do, the legacy that we would like to leave, then it's important to begin to look at our future selves and begin to make some decisions today to help us move more towards the person that we want to be, realizing it may change along the way. I can tell you that when I was younger, I never thought I would be the CEO of a company or doing anything like this. I honestly don't know what I wanted to do with my life. I can't look back and say, you know, I knew from age 10 I wanted to be an artist or whatever it might be. But I can tell you that the decisions I've made along the way, I've changed my mind many times. I mean, I started going to school for marriage and family therapy and realized halfway through, this is not what I want to do. This is not where my giftedness and skill set is. And so even though I made decisions to move forward in life, I realized from some of those decisions that it wasn't what I wanted to do. And I consider that a win as much as moving toward doing something and realizing you do want to do it. So as we move towards this future self that we want to be and thinking in the areas of our pies, our physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual selves, that can act as an overarching framework to help us make some decisions, to make some goals long-term, to think about our future selves and how we really want to be in the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years in each of those areas. I mentioned how the longevity toolkit type of thing that Dr. Peter Attia talks about when he talks about encouraging people to think about their last decade of life and what are the things you want to be able to do in that last decade of life. And then let that be a guide to the things you should do now in order to move towards that ideal future self. And I talked about what that's looked like for me. And it's one thing to think about that physically, but even just thinking intellectually, what are the ways I want to give back to the world? What are the things I want to know? What are the things I want to study more or invest more time in? Emotionally, what would I love my relationships to look like? How do I want the people around me to feel because of the way that I've interacted with them? Spiritually, how aligned do I want to be with my faith? Where do I want to be in my faith journey or in my purpose in life or in how I give back to others? How do I want to be living out and expressing my faith? These are things that if we aren't proactive about thinking about them, then it more than likely leads us to allow life to take control of us instead of us taking control of our life. And I use that term, taking control of our life, very loosely, because I believe the only thing we can really control is our reaction to the circumstances that we encounter on a day-to-day basis. And that's about it, right? A lot of things are going to come in that we can't control, which we talked about in this episode. But I love how Hal Hirschfield has really looked at it and encouraged people to begin making positive steps forward. And that's exactly what we want to do to become our best selves. Share this episode with a friend if you found it helpful. It can be a great way to bless someone else with some encouragement and more positive ways to think about things. Would love if you would leave a review of this podcast anywhere that you listen to it. And as always, until next week, stay strong.